Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's 5 at 5 on Grant and Danny is brought to you by our good friends at Wave Soda. It's simple, bubbly water, splash of real juice, tiny bit of caffeine, unsweetened, no stevia or artificial sweeteners. Got a clean finish, just 2 to 6 grams of sugar, 15 to 25 calories per can. Order now at wavesoda.com and receive 15% by entering Grant or Danny when you check out as your promo code Grant or Danny. Quickly, should remind you, 525, about 20 minutes out, Luke Johnson covers the Saints in New Orleans. We scout the opponent every Friday. We got lots of questions about the Saints. Great opportunity for you to learn about the team Washington's playing this weekend, figure out what their game plan is going to be. So we will have Luke on to do that in 20 minutes. For our 5 at 5 today, Football Friday, we're going to rank our five favorite games of the weekend. That starts with the Bills and the Chiefs. This is your marquee matchup. Sunday Night Football, Buffalo and Kansas City, rematch of the AFC Championship game last year. And while the Chiefs are only 2-2, probably a rematch of two of the three or four best teams in football right now this moment.
Fluky thing has the Chiefs at 2-2, right? They have a commanding lead, a weird Pat Mahomes misstep, and a Clyde Edwards-Helaire fluke fumble led them to lose to an incredible game against the Ravens. They ought to be 3-1. They're not. They're 2-2. They need it. They'll get right at some point. Even if they don't beat Buffalo, you know they're going to rip off a bunch in a row. But Buffalo right now is playing as good as anybody in the sport. After a week one hiccup that they should be kicking themselves over, losing the game against the Steelers because of a block punt, they have been blowing the doors off of teams. I can't wait to watch this one.
The Chiefs' defense is absolutely awful. And I don't know that stylistically, the way they play offense, they give their defense a chance to be good, but it's got to be better than this. And if you go through the numbers this year, they're on pace to be one of the worst defenses of all time. Really, the only group I can think of top of the head that is definitively worse is the Seahawks. So you saw yesterday, they're on pace to give up more yards than anybody ever has in the history of the league. But Kansas City ranks 31 in defense, 32 in yards per play, which is the metric I care about. Stopping the run, 31 overall, 32 in yards per play. Stopping the pass, 27th overall, 30th in yards per play. They're 26th at getting to the quarterback. They're 32nd at how many first downs they give up a game. So that's a fortuitous little matchup if you're Josh Allen in Buffalo. Can you keep up? You should be able to against this defense. It's why in a lot of the games where Kansas City is favored, I never really like them to cover, because you're going to get a lot of those backdoor opportunities.
Yeah, they don't as often as you think for a winning team.
I think they've covered, counting this past week, which was just the second time in the last several weeks, that they've gone back to midway through last season. It's like two of their last 14 games. I like the Chiefs to win, but this will be the last time I kind of give them a benefit of the doubt because they got Mahomes and Reed. Bills beat them. It's wide open in the AFC at that point, I feel like.
You have to say that, yeah.
Second best game in our five that we're breaking down in our 5 at 5 on G&D. We debated this one back and forth. We ended up settling on the Browns and the Chargers. I mean, you could tell me why you like the game. For me, it's the juxtaposition of Cleveland's old school, run the ball down your throat. The Chargers are analytically brilliant under Brandon Staley. They want to spread you out. They got huge tight ends and receivers. They throw jump balls. Justin Herbert is 2021 in a nutshell as a quarterback. Great athlete and play extender with a strong arm. I can't wait to see which of these two teams gets to 4-1.
Great measuring stick game. Both these teams are good, and you touched on it. They do it differently. Chargers, again, are a couple weird, fluky calls away from being 4-0 at this point. They lost to a good Dallas Cowboys team. You don't excuse that. It happens. That's the NFL. Breaks go in both different directions. But Cleveland is also capable. They had Kansas City down at the mat and only lost that game by 4 points. So these are two really good teams. And when two really good teams play, these are kind of nice measuring stick games. These are the kind of games that resonate beyond a week or two. In a week-to-week league, we pull back. We remember, hey, when they matched up, talking about these two good teams, this is how the Chargers looked against that good Cleveland defense. This is how Cleveland's offense matched up against Joey Bosa, et cetera. I can't wait for this one. That's the second best game of the weekend, I think.
I think the Browns defense is the best in football. I know that the numbers would tell you that I think it might still be Buffalo 1 and Carolina's right there in some categories. But I will take the Browns defense over any other defense in the league. The last 2 weeks, what they've done has been stunning. I mean, they completely embarrassed the Bears. You don't really see what happened to Chicago happen in this league. They had one net passing yard.
Mm.
That's insane. A week later, you go, well, now they got to deal with the Vikings. Cousins has been playing well. Jefferson and Thielen on the outside. Dalvin Cook's coming back from injury. Minnesota couldn't do anything on offense. They scored an opening drive touchdown where they went straight down the field. I don't know that they had as many yards like after that drive for like their next six drives as they had on that first drive.
Well, think about this. The Bills, who are statistically right now better than Cleveland by a significant measure when it comes to yards per play, yards per pass attempt, et cetera. Cleveland has that Kansas City outlier where the Chiefs did whatever they want on offense because they're the Chiefs. They're excellent.
Well, just look at who they played overall.
Yeah, and so with that, if you know, just take it away because it's part of the sample, but as Buffalo's now got Kansas City this weekend. But my point is, Cleveland's pretty close to Buffalo in a lot of categories with Kansas City in their rearview mirror. That's amazing that they've been able to recover that dramatically and dominated their previous three opponents.
Two really good offense.
Yeah.
They played the Chiefs and the Vikings. You look at the Bills played Washington. Solid offense, I would say.
The Steelers, who are terrible.
They played the Steelers, who stink on offense. They played the Dolphins without their starting quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa.
Who's bad anyway.
And they played the Texans with Davis Mills, mm-hmm. who's far and away, unequivocally, the worst quarterback playing in football right now. So, yeah, one of those teams has been pretty tested. And I think Myles Garrett, as of this second, is the defensive player of the year in the NFL. So I love this game. I love this matchup. I think it might be my favorite on the slate. Bills Chiefs is number one seed for sure. But this is kind of my favorite nerd out. Watch this game. Hopefully I'll be home in time for the second half and well, I have to go back on Game Pass and catch the first couple quarters. All right, number three, Packers-Bengals, Green Bay at Cincinnati. Games like this are fun. You don't see these teams play a lot. Colors you don't often see, the green and the gold, the orange and the black. It's the NFC, it's the AFC. So that makes it interesting. But now you got 3-1 Green Bay, who looks completely different than we thought after week one they were going to be.
Uh-huh.
They are who we originally thought they were. They're very good. And the Bengals. Zach Taylor was a big dumb idiot, and they weren't doing anything correctly, and people were going to get fired. Well, maybe just give someone time to build a program. I don't know. Add some talent on defense and see what happens. The Sean McVay disciple has this Bengals going in the right direction. If they could knock off Green Bay,
imagine.
I know it's a home game, but even still, they beat the Packers and make Aaron Rodgers look pedestrian when he comes in on a heater. Bro, that's a organizational altering win.
You'd have to think about them differently, certainly. And they've already been pretty impressive. They have a fluky, weird, bad loss to Chicago in week two. I think it's going to look worse and worse as this season progresses, where Joe Burrow turned the ball over a million times, and that was kind of an out-of-character bad performance.
He threw interceptions on three straight plays in that game.
Yeah, just and they still only lost that game by a field goal on the road in Chicago. You beat Green Bay, you're sitting at 4-1. Then you go Detroit. Ravens will be a tough game, divisional thing. But the Jets are coming up not too long from now. Cincinnati's got a chance to harvest some nuts here. This would be, as you said, kind of a, right now we're going, they're 3-1, yeah, but. You beat Green Bay, and as you said, it's a home game, but still, you beat Aaron Rodgers and company as the way they've ripped off three straight wins, that will change a lot of people's perceptions.
I think the Packers win that game and don't have much problem doing it, but I am open to the possibility, if the Bengals win, of giving them a lot more respect right away. Like, this is your pendulum game for me. You get to 4-1 with a mm-hmm. win over the Packers. I view you in a different light. The performance against the Bears is hard to unsee, and they also, in week one, won a game in overtime. They only had a chance to win because of a fluke fumble by Dalvin Cook. And so I just kind of keep thinking, that record's not legit. But here you go. Here's your chance. Get to 4-1. Here's game number four in our 5-5 today, ranking all of the games moving ahead in the NFL weekend here in week five. 49ers Cardinals. San Francisco, Danny, if they lose this game, falls under 500 through five. Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt last week. Trey Lance came in. Was not pretty initially for Trey Lance. Now you get the undefeated Cardinals. Arizona's got a chance to be 5-0. We know what that would mean. They're on, in business. Cool. We all thought the 49ers were going to bounce back big time this year. They might be sub-500 entering the middle of October.
So I said this about San Francisco, and I didn't look very good through the first couple weeks. This off-injured team has a bunch of injuries, and here they are, right? They're dealing with all that. And Arizona, I didn't really trust because they looked awesome at times last year. Remember when they beat the pants off of Washington early? They had that great win against Buffalo where they looked great. But I said, yeah, but I don't trust them. Well, through 4 weeks, who's been better than them, honestly, unequivocally wire to wire? They've been really, really good. So divisional game, it matters probably more for San Francisco right now, who's going to be, you know, pretty desperate to do it, but they may not have the horses to take on Arizona, who offensively is incredible, and they're opportunistic on defense. They get after the passer a little bit. They create some problems. They want to turn you over. They want that high-tempo shootout because they think they'll make more plays than you will.
Kyler Murray, the front runner for the MVP in the National Football League, has completely changed the way defenses have to operate because he has been able this year to make awesome throws from the pocket, to be a legitimate pocket passing standout at quarterback with his size. Sometimes it's Wilson-esque. They got to move the pocket, roll him out, let him set up and plant. He's not even running as much as you'd think, but you have to account for that. And just when you think, anytime on like a 3rd and 7, you got everything covered up, you better not play man against them. You turn and run in man, he's just going to take off for 15, 18 yards. Easy.
Yeah, they're scoring 35 a game. They're no joke.
God, he's good. Spectacular decision right after they had Rosen to just go back to the well with the first overall pick the next year.
Indeed.
And take that guy. Fifth and final game, Colts and Ravens in Baltimore. Indianapolis got off to a treacherous start to begin the year. Sadly, we thought this would be one of those teams that had a chance to go to a Super Bowl. They do everything right in their front office. They had a really good offseason. And then they got pummeled by injuries throughout the preseason. They're all pro guard, their quarterback, missing a ton of time. Well, Carson Wentz came back right in time for week one. Wentz is playing really well. Sneaky. No one's talking about that. Last year he was broken and he didn't turn, he turned the ball over a lot. He's one of the leaders right now, according to PFF, in turnover worthy throws at the quarterback position. And it doesn't matter because they're 1-3. Ravens, speaking of injuries, have overcome a billion. I thought their demise was being written in front of our eyes. They got a chance to be 4-1 if they beat the Colts at home on Monday night.
It's just such a good program. And Harbaugh and company deserve a lot of credit for always kind of being competitive. And they mirror what Pittsburgh has done for so long. It takes a minute, right? You're not going to be as good when you lose their marquee cornerbacks and 9 running backs and whatever. But they'll get up to speed. And their performance against Denver this past weekend was complete and really, really good. Really impressive how good they are. The Colts, again, are pretty desperate. They need it if they want to have a relevant season. What's interesting is that AFC South is just not good. When you look at Tennessee after having dropped the games that they have, they don't quite look the part at this stage. So it's still wide open for anybody, but it is a tough ask to stop Lamar Jackson and company.
Baltimore's defense is what, to me, the story of their season has been. First couple of weeks, based on the injuries in the secondary, I thought it would be open season moving the football against that team through the air. As we saw,
it was for the Raiders.
What Derek Carr did as they won that 33-27 game in overtime. The following week, they played the Chiefs, who scored 35 points, and I thought, they're going to give up 400 yards every week.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, I know it was the Lions, but they won a squeaker, 19-17, with the record field goal. But they allowed 17 points to Detroit. They played Denver this past week, and they gave up 7 points in that game. The reason I thought they were done was that defense, and they responded and bounced right back. Those are the 5 games we like the most in the NFL this weekend, our 5 at 5 on Grant and Danny. We are scouting the opponent next with an analyst who covers the Saints day in and day out. I just saw on the injury report, it sounds like they could be without 2 offensive linemen this week. Last year, that always meant good things. Can you take advantage? G&D on the Fan. We'll be right back. Wow, the Astros just busted this game wide open. Two-run double, two-run homer back-to-back. They're up 9-4 on the White Sox in Houston.
Always good to see the good guys do well. Oh, wait, that's so gross.
It was just overstated that, like, that team wasn't good and they just were cheaters.
Oh, no, they're terrific.
I don't know. You're being serious.
Yeah. They're really good.
Those guys are awesome.
It's super annoying, by the way. I wish was that it was all because of the cheating and they would just go back to winning 60 games or something. That ain't happening. That team's really good. They might rep the American League.
They're just straight mashing. I don't know what I want to happen in these baseball playoffs, by the way. Tampa Bay's the team I'm rooting for because it's just the little engine who could, and they do everything smart and better than everyone else analytically. I really would like Dusty to win a ring. I think probably is one of the things I would enjoy most. And I think he probably can. You don't really have to do a lot of in-game managing in the American League. You know, he was at times a detriment here in Washington in the playoffs because he's not a great manager when you got a X and O in these playoff games.
And in San Francisco, in the American League, you just kind of
fill out the lineup card and let your boys go mash.
Indeed.
I think he's been a good manager for a long time. It'd be great to see him win. So we'll see. But they're up 5 runs. Let's get to the BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today. Visit BetQL.com. We wanted to talk about the Saints and scout the opponent. So let's do that right now. Let's get our official scouting report from Luke Johnson, who covers the Saints for the Advocate in New Orleans. Luke, thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Luke, appreciate the time. So I think Sean Payton's a great coach. I've always been a fan of his. Has he met Alvin Kamara? Is he familiar with how good he is as a receiver, and why aren't they throwing him the football?
Well, I can say yes, he has. I've seen it with my own two eyes. And then to answer the second part of that question, I have no idea. Last week was the first time in Alvin's career that he wasn't even targeted, which is kind of insane. I think even if defenses are kind of selling out to make sure that they are stopping Alvin Kamara and preventing him from catching passes, he still gets his. You know, he's a transcendent type of player. So it's strange not to see it happen. He's only got 10 catches for 62 yards the first four games. That's well below his kind of career averages per game. So at some point, you think it's gotta happen. It's been odd seeing how they've used him this year. You know, they've been just as a team, they've been really heavily relying on the run game, and Alvin's been taking the brunt of that workload. He's got 78 carries right now, which is number 3 in the NFL. He's never finished higher than number 16. He's on pace to just like shatter his career personal best in rushing attempts, but that's kind of come at the expense of him in the passing game. So I wouldn't expect that to continue, just considering the way his first four seasons went. I mean, he's up over 80 catches every year. I would anticipate at some point that's going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Luke, text Sean Payton and tell him that Washington's linebackers are awesome in coverage, so he should not try to throw it to Kamara this week. But and make sure he doesn't watch the film or anything. Just tell him that you're sure about it.
Yeah, it might be a little late in the game for that one, but I'll give it a shot, and we'll see what he says. He'll probably just tell me to stop effing texting him or something like that. I don't know.
That's great. But
whatever you can do would help. Hey, how's Jameis played so far?
I think he's been okay. The issue is just that they haven't really. I say issue. This has kind of been the big topic of conversation down here this week, but they haven't really given him a lot of opportunities. Look, right now the Saints as a team have 90 passing attempts through four games, and that's the lowest amount of passing attempts by an NFL team through the first four games of the season since 2010. And look, a lot has changed in the NFL.
That's a great stat. What is that?
They have a formula they're working with right now, and they have a very good defense, and they really believe in their ground game. And I think the Panthers probably expose a little bit of weakness when they're missing a couple offensive linemen. They haven't been able to protect probably as well as we've seen in the past. And Drew Brees was essentially a sixth offensive lineman out there. I mean, that guy was calling protections and he was getting rid of the ball fast. I think they're trying to avoid negative plays. And for the most part, it's worked, right? It worked against Green Bay, and it worked against New England, and it worked for big chunks of the Giants game. But I think, you know, and this is something that I've been kind of telling people this week, I think the margin for error for that is much smaller, right? If you're counting on your football team in 2021 to go out and put together a 13-play drive and you know, just run the ball down the team's throat and then force a couple turnovers on defense, that you're asking a lot out of those guys. It's putting a lot of stress on those guys. And, you know, I think we saw they were winning by 11 against the Giants and with 7 minutes left in that game. And we saw the flaws in that side of that kind of tactic, right? The Giants connected on one big play, and then all of a sudden it's a 3-point game. And if you don't put together a drive right after that, you know, the game is kind of out of your hands. So at some point, I think we're going to see them open it up a little bit with the passing game. And maybe it's just they're waiting until after the bye and they get some guys back. You know, they have a bye after the Washington game, so they'll probably get Michael Thomas back. And you know, maybe their center, Eric McCoy, who's really, really important to what they do. Maybe left tackle Teron Armstead, who, in my opinion, is one of the top three left tackles in all of football. And maybe we'll see him open it up after that. But it's got to happen at some point. I don't think you can go through a 17-game season and hope to you know, contend for a division title and win a bunch of football games when this is the way you want to play.
Yeah, I certainly hope it's after the bye week and not, say, this week against an abominable pass defense. Luke Johnson with us here covers the Saints for the New Orleans Advocate. Defensively, Luke, I can think of a good example with my analogy here, but there have been a lot of contexts in my life where I thought I knew what a word meant, and then somebody said, well, what does that word mean? And I kind of went, like my voice went up a lot. This is me about the New Orleans defense. I think it's good. I think the defense is good. Is it, though? I kind of can't tell. I can't get a read on them.
Yeah, I think they are. I think by the time the season ends, they'll be, you know, top 10, top 11 defense. They'll force a lot of turnovers. They're missing a lot of key guys right now, which is certainly hurt them. Not having Marcus Davenport out there, he's a really good pass rusher, even though he hasn't really shown it at times in his career. He had a just tremendous training camp. He looked really, really good against Green Bay, and then, you know, bang, he's out for 5 weeks. They've been without David Onyemata, who you know, probably a lot of people don't know his name, but here people do. He's very, very important to what they do on the interior. Very good interior rusher. They're missing Quan Alexander, who's a, you know, playmaking linebacker. And you know, they've put some guys in those places, and they've been really good, even without those guys. I think their secondary is outstanding, even though Paulson Adebo, their rookie corner opposite Marshawn Lattimore, has been a little up and down. Marcus Williams plays a great kind of deep center field role. Malcolm Jenkins, you know, people in Washington know a lot about Malcolm. He's just a really incredibly savvy player who's still at 32 or 33 years old. He's still got it physically. DeMario Davis, if you don't know his name, I think he's a top three linebacker in the NFL. He's really, really good sideline to sideline, making plays in the passing game. So it really, every level of this defense, I think they have guys that can beat you. So I think they're good. I think they're really good.
Can I ask this this way, though? So with Taylor Heinicke, who's Washington's quarterback, my thing I need now is data points against, like, stellar defenses. They played one, Buffalo, and he got pretty exposed and threw some bad interceptions. And so my thing is, it's cool when he plays really well indoors against Atlanta when they don't mix coverages and don't have great players. Like, I want him to go out against really good defenses and play well. Would this qualify as that, even with all the injuries, or no?
Yeah, I think so. I think you know, the one thing I will say, though, is at times quarterbacks like Heinicke, who can extend plays, have given them trouble. They play a lot of man defense, and I think they're really, really good in that. But their pass rush hasn't been as good this year as it has been in years past. And if Heinicke's back, you know, scrambling around back there and letting guys get open against that man coverage, I think it kind of exposed a little bit of a weakness on the Saints right now. So he could go out and have a really good game, and the Saints could be a really good defense. And then both those things could kind of counteract that point that you're looking for there. You know, it wouldn't surprise me to see him go out and have a nice game against the Saints. It also wouldn't surprise me to see them just kind of shut down the ground game and make life hard on them. So we'll see. We'll see what kind of answer you get on Sunday.
Luke, this one's for me because I'm curious. What's the vibe like for Mike Thomas down there? Is there acrimony still, or are fans kind of annoyed? Just kind of what's the general pulse?
Yeah, it's kind of tough, right? I think there's a lot of people down here who are really annoyed with him. And, you know, after the latest, bit of kind of crazy news to come out of the Mike Thomas situation this offseason, there's a lot of chatter just among the fan base. Like, can we trade Mike Thomas? You know, they wanted to get rid of him. But then a huge chunk of them are like, well, he's really good, and I don't care, you know, what the relationship is with him and the team. They need to have him on the field. And then you go out and see him play four games and their entire receiving core has like 200 receiving yards. They're like, yeah, please let's get Michael Thomas back. So yeah, I think that Sean Payton's a really good manager of people, right? He's pretty good with these mercurial personalities. And Mike Thomas certainly is one. So you know, I think he understands the importance of having somebody like Mike in the lineup, and any sort of off-season dust up they have is going to be, probably old news by the time he gets back. And I think they'll be able to move forward and be okay.
Based on the injury report, and we're being joined right now, talking New Orleans Saints football and getting to the bottom of this team as we scout the opponent. I want to know about the offensive line. It sounds like injury report-wise, maybe two starters out. You referenced both, but is that new? Is that like weeks and weeks now where these guys that are replacing them are pretty comfortable? We're looking at this from the Washington perspective where their defensive front has not been able to get pressure, Luke.
Yeah, these guys are really key parts to what they do. And yeah, if the practice squad rules were back what they were in 2019, you know, both of them would probably be on IR right now. Eric McCoy has been out since five snaps into the season. He went down in week one against Green Bay with a calf injury. Teron Armstead hasn't been at practice since week three against New England. He only played seven snaps in that game. So you know, they've had to be, you know, kind of shuffling at various points throughout this year. But I think they've done a pretty good job. They had one game against Carolina where it was just a disaster. You know, guys running free. They were blitzing from all over the place. And the new center, they shifted their starting right guard over to center, Cesar Ruiz, who's their 2020 first-round pick. They were just having a hard time picking up where they were coming from. I think once that happened, they were able to iron out a lot of their protection issues. The guys they've had sliding in have been pretty good. James Hurst is their swing tackle, and he's a guy who started 20 games before coming to New Orleans. He's been solid. Calvin Throckmorton's a guy they got playing right guard with Ruiz over to center, and he's been decent. Yeah, I think the protection hasn't really been an issue outside of that one game. But, even though Washington's had their issues getting after the quarterback, I don't know if the Saints have seen a defensive front quite like this one. Just with the level of talent they have, you know, I think there's a possibility if this gets to be a game where the Saints have to sling it around a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised to see Washington get after Jameis a little bit.
Luke, great info, buddy. Really appreciate you taking the time with us, man. Thanks.
No problem, guys.
We'll be following your content on game day. There's Luke Johnson with us on Grant and Danny. Love that segment. Scouting the opponent, getting to the bottom of the team Washington has coming up next on the docket. And next is just 2 days away now at FedEx Field. Speaking of next, confidence points picks time. We will go through the standings, get you an update. We'll make our picks for this weekend around the NFL. The time you've all been waiting for. Let's figure out who's taking another step toward being an intern at 106.7 The Fan. A true demotion. They have to give up their salary, and they have to be unpaid as an employee for an entire calendar year. Unbelievably high stakes that Danny agreed to and Ryan and Darius agreed to.
That's right.
Think?
Eyes wide open. Everyone agreed. Everyone knew exactly what the terms were. And wait, what?
For a day.
For a day.
They're an intern. So maybe they could donate a day's salary to a charity of their choice. Maybe.
I suppose you're allowed to.
So let's get to the standings. Darris, you normally update us on such things. I see that you've got it in front of you. So why don't you tell me, tell Danny specifically, but also tell me and Ryan, but mostly Danny. What do the standings look like right now in confidence points picks?
The standings right now in, with 38 points is Ryan in first place.
Attaboy, Ryan.
Yeah.
Where the air is crisp.
There is crisp over there. In second place is yours truly, Darris Cameron, producer of the Grand Danny Show, at 34.
Producers doing well. Top two spots on the old Mount Rushmore here.
Yes, indeed. And then in third place, GP with 33 points. So
nipping
it's actually
at your damn heels.
It's really close. It's actually really close.
You
and
can
then
feel my warm breath on the back of your neck.
With a 9-point deficit in fourth place, one Daniel Ruya.
So what's that score then?
24 points. He has 24.
So one of these is not like the others. You're going to have to figure out.
There's a lot of threes that start these things, then there's one with two.
38, 34, 33, and 24. Having said that, last week Danny had his best week yet. I think we all owe him a congratulations, right?
No, nobody owes anybody anything yet.
It was a 10-point week for Danny, where he randomly picked games and sandbagged the segment. So we're hoping for another 10-point week for him or more. Perhaps he has a 15-point week. He's perfect.
No one knows.
By sandbagging the segment and randomly choosing games. All right, let's go in the order of the standings. So we'll go Ryan, Darris, me, and then Danny. Let's see if we're going by the standings. You'd go fourth, I think.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here all we right. go. 5-point play, Ryan.
All right, my 5-point play. I got the Tennessee Titans -4.5 against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I have zero faith in the Jaguars this week, and I expect Urban Meyer to be canned Monday morning. Hot take of the week.
Wow, that Boom. Burnt. I have no hair on my knuckles anymore.
I don't know how to follow that up.
That's, I mean, you got to just demand that someone gets fired, I think.
Sheesh. Well, I don't, man. I don't think the coach of the Dolphins is getting fired, but I don't see the Dolphins covering the 9.5 that the Buccaneers have been favored by. So I do have the Buccaneers with as my 5-point pick -9.5.
Darris lays some big numbers.
I do.
You know that about Darris?
Yeah, he's not scared.
My default when I see big numbers is always to zig. And you're better than me at this, so keep zagging.
He got zagging. Yeah.
He does the other bit. He's like, oh, the Bucs, they're going to beat him by 60. I'm always nervous about those. Number five, 5-pointer for me, the Falcons -2.5. They play the Jets coming off of a win. This game's in London. It's like at 8:14 in the morning. The Falcons are going to beat the Jets by more than 2.5 points. They've had some meltdown losses. Otherwise, they're actually kind of decent. I don't think the Jets can win two games in a row. They'll lose by a field goal.
So my 5-pointer that I randomized and then flipped a coin for, one of my least favorite games of the week. I would stay away from this normally, but when I pick 5-point plays, I lose them. So I'm hoping that this changes my luck. I got Arizona favored by 4.5 against a beat-up San Francisco 49ers team. Don't feel great about it, but it's my 5-pointer.
Ooh, okay. I did not touch that one.
All right, my 4-point play, I have the Packers -3 going into Cincinnati. I just think it's too close of a spread, and I think it's just tough to beat Rodgers, in my opinion. I know he struggled against Cincy in his career, but I just see him blowing it up by like 2 touchdowns or so.
4-point play, Carolina's at home versus Philly. They are getting 3 points. They're 3-point favorites. I have Carolina bouncing back after that. Tough loss in Dallas. I know Christian McCaffrey is doubtful.
Pretty much not playing, yeah. Listed doubtful.
Not worried about it, though. I think Carolina handles business.
You still got Sam Darnold. And when you
league
get
leader
Sam
in
Darnold,
rushing touchdowns. You know what you have.
Yeah.
Good things happen. I hate to say this. Earmuffs everybody who listens and loves
Oh,
us.
No.
The New Orleans Saints, -2.5.
No.
4-point play. I think Washington hangs. I really do. And had they have not lost to the Giants last week, I might have been taking Washington in some points. The Saints handled the Giants for 3.5 quarters and then let a game slip away. Look at how they responded the last time they've had a game like that this season. I think they play really well. They probably win like a 27-20 kind of game. But 2.5 is just ultra tight for me.
4-point play. The spin the wheel and the coin toss landed on Green Bay -3 as well. I actually think Cincy will keep it close, but Green Bay ultimately wins by touchdown. So I actually like that pick for -4. So, there Ryan, sorry, you're doomed.
Oh, no. All right, so for my 3-point play, I have Carolina -3. And, I think it's going to be not even close, in my opinion.
My three-point play is Arizona minus 4.5 over San Francisco. I hope it doesn't hit because that means Danny won't get 5 points.
Is Jimmy Garoppolo playing?
It is not looking like it. It's looking like a Trey Lance start, and I'm not feeling it.
I got to be honest. I should have put bet on that game.
Yeah.
He looked like he was lost like last year's Easter egg last
Pretty
week.
Inaccurate last week.
Yeah. Here's what they could do. Kyle Shanahan could be brilliant and design some stuff, and he could run all over the place. I mean, he's smart enough, and Lance is an unbelievably gifted athlete, but that's scary for me. I won't spend a lot of time here because this game was already addressed. I got the Titans minus 4.5. The Jaguars fallout continues. I don't think Urban Meyer's getting fired, so I'm not going to go as hard in the paint as my guy Ryan. But the Titans are more than 4.5 points better than Jacksonville. They had their great game against the Bengals, and they're going to regress again back to the mean.
Oh, that's me. I'm sorry. I was waiting for the next person. I'm last. I forgot about that. Houston plus 9 against the New England Patriots. I do think the Patriots cover the spread, so this is when the randomizing and coin flipping backfires with my 3-point play, Houston plus 9.
All right, so for my 2-point play, I have the Chargers minus 2.5 going against Cleveland. I just don't think it's going to be too close. I think Herbert's going to be dicing up that defense, and Baker Mayfield's just not that good. He's playing injured.
My 2-point play, this game's already been talked about, Tennessee minus 4.5 over Jacksonville.
2-point play. How are the Vikings 10-point favorites over anybody? Has anyone watched them play? They miss kicks. They lose fumbles. Like, they do everything they can to keep teams in games. They always play squeakers. Give me the Lions plus 10.
Dead cat bounce. The Pittsburgh Steelers plus 1 against the Denver Broncos.
Really? You like that one or just?
Terrified of it, but here we are.
Okay. You're defying math and logic that you've hated like 9 of the randomized 10 picks that you've ended up with. There's like some kind of math equation there that doesn't quite work out.
Uncle Stanzing.
All right, my 1-point play. I have Buffalo plus 3 going into Kansas City. Yep. That's my 1-point play. Not too confident.
My 1-point play is Chicago covering the plus 5.5 in Las Vegas. Las Vegas has all their home games so far have been overtime games where they've won really close.
Good nugget.
I'm keeping Chicago in that.
I'm staying Monday Night Football primetime theme here. 1-pointer, Colts plus 7 against the Ravens. They'll lose the game, but they'll be within a touchdown. I don't think Baltimore buries teams. Plus 7 in the Colts.
So I got Minnesota. The line I saw was minus 9.5. Do I have to change that to 10? Because you've got 10. That they're
we'll
a favorite
right
over
now
Detroit?
It's 10.
Okay, so then Minnesota by 10.
You're going the other way.
Yeah, one point game.
Just crush the Lions. All right, that is our picks this week. Danny's climbing his way up the standings, scratching and clawing. We'll see if he can stay hot. Grant and Danny will update the injury report for you next on The Fan. The first of 4 Major League Baseball playoff games today just ended in Houston, where Dusty Baker's Astros took a 2-0 series lead over the Chicago White Sox. In these best-of-5 series, when a team is up 2-0, they go on to win the series 88% of the time.
I remember examples of when it didn't happen, and that just lets you know that that's how rare that is. I remember Oakland went up 2-0. Years and years and years ago, Yankees came storming back and beat them. It is a rare thing. But, man, Houston looks like the better team by a lot.
Second game of the 4 that is now into the middle innings. Corbin Burns is working on a 1-hitter. He's got nobody on in the 5th, just erased his only hit with a double play, by the way. He's probably going to win the Cy Young in the National League. I'm hoping that Max gets run, kind of a lifetime achievement push for him, because he was dead even with Burns going into the last couple of weeks. He got hit around a couple times late, and Burns pitched a little better. But what an unbelievable season the power right-hander has had for the Brewers, who just throws a bunch of sliders, middle of the plate, 90-plus miles an hour.
And he doesn't walk anybody. It's remarkable.
He had like 60-some strikeouts before he walked a batter this year. But here's what I want to say about this game really quick. I mentioned with these other series, I don't really care that much what happens. The only thing I know is that I want Tampa Bay to beat Boston. I want Atlanta to be swept. This Braves team is not that good. And what would really be annoying is if somehow they went on a run. Not to mention Braves fans are insufferable. And one of the great things that you get to do when they start to talk trash about the Nats is just reference that it's not 1994 anymore and that the Nationals won a championship a couple years ago. So it's really cool to be able to hold that over their heads.
Yeah, so you're getting into what me as a sports fan, what I usually do when my DC teams are bad, and it's the hierarchy of hatred. You basically get into your web and you've got these equations and it's all kind of set up. Division rival.
Now, is that Charlotte's or Brandon? Which web am I looking for?
You're looking for Brandon, who went to Kentucky, I believe, and just threw sinkers in the middle of the plate that just dove down and into righties. And, of course, away from lefties.
Could also be Logan, one of the great pitchers in baseball this year with the Giants.
Logan Webb had a great year. He started their game one, I think, right? He's their game one starter?
Tonight.
Yeah, there you go. But, yeah, the hierarchy of hatred, it's really important. So usually the way it goes is if you've got a division rival whose guts you hate, you root for them to lose in the NFL playoffs, divisional playoffs in baseball, et cetera, et cetera. But now you've got extra special things. Like, there's overarching hatred for teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers. So they need to all lose for me to be pleased. So I need the Braves to lose ASAP. I wish their series was over yesterday. I'm tired of the Dodgers. I want them to go. I need Red Sox fans and New England fans in general to experience about 100 years of bitter, freezing, awful loneliness. And I need generations of kids upon kids upon kids and then their great, great, great grandkids to experience nothing but bitter sadness too.
One of the things I will never understand about sports fans are the people who root for the teams from your own division as if somehow it like,
Makes your
team better and or like this is the Big Ten or the SEC and you want your record in the bowls to be good. I want the Braves to go to the World Series because it would mean that the NL East is better. No, the NL East was terrible this year. Just wear that comfortably and know that and go to sleep and you'll wake up in the morning and everything's fine. You should always root for the teams in your division that you play 19 times whose fans are insufferable on social media. To lose as fast as possible in the playoffs. Imagine that. Like fans of the football team, which sounds, again, still weird to say.
So weird.
I'd love to have a name. But there are fans of the football team in town that will root for the Eagles or the Giants in the playoffs because they're like NFC East backers.
Yeah. I've told you about this before. My father's one of these people. I'll never forget Super Bowl for the 1986 season. So it takes place, of course, 1987. But the 1986 season... The Giants have bested the Washington, then the Redskins, in the conference title game 17-0.
Is that a Hostetler situation?
No, I think that was still Phil Simms.
Phil Simms?
Phil! That was a team that I just despise. A lot of Joe Morris, so much Mark Bavaro and Phil McConkie and Otis Anderson and Maurice Carthon. Groups of people that I just despise, and I hate those fans still today. We don't hate the Giants enough as a fan base. But they're playing Denver in the Super Bowl. I have no animosity towards Denver. Denver's the team that wears orange. Carl Mecklenburg's there. They got the posse. You know, that's fine. Let's talk about Ricky Nateel and Vance Johnson and all these guys. The Giants score. My father pumps his fist and says, yeah. And I did that slow. Like, what are you talking about, old man? What is this? And he says, no, you root for the team. And I said, no, you don't. I hate that group of people wearing blue with the word Giants on the side of their helmet. I hope they all sprain their ankles.
Those were a cool fit, though, as the kids would say.
I hope they have to use the team manager like it's Waterboy. I hope every one of them sprains an ankle. No permanent life injuries, but I want all of them to experience sadness. You're rooting for... And he says, yeah, because it makes your team feel more legit. I'm doing a bad impression of my dad, but I was horrified by that.
You won't see me doing that.
Never.
I kind of get it. That's not
no,
quite true.
I don't.
No, hold on. Okay. I didn't finish. I am more okay with it, even though I still think it's absurd, at the collegiate level, where conferences do mean something, even though they mean less now than ever because Maryland is in the Big Ten, yeah. You know, and because
half the teams are in the SEC.
Everyone's changing conferences all the time. But if you're going to do the, I root for the Big Ten teams in the bowl games because it makes me look better than what your dad said, in my opinion.
Okay.
Still absurd. You're an Ohio State fan. Never root for Michigan.
It's pretty simple.
Never root for
Penn State,
Indiana. Stop doing that right now, this second. But it's just one of those things I don't get. So 9-4 final for the Astros over the White Sox. But more importantly, I suppose, the bad guys, the Braves, are tied with the Brewers in game one in Milwaukee as they're in to the middle innings right now. All right, quickly, I want to get your injury report, and then we're going to predict Taylor Heinicke's stat line this weekend. Anybody who wants to jump in on this fun, you can do that. We're going to open up the Gambit DC listener lines right now at 800-636-1067. I want to know what you think Taylor Heinicke's stat line is going to be this weekend. You can be as detailed as you want in breaking down his performance. I want yards, touchdowns, interceptions, and any anecdotes you want to add on your prediction for Taylor Heinicke against what is probably the second-best defense he's played. I think a little bit better than the Giants, maybe. Not quite as good as the Bills. Injury report, De'Ami Brown is out. Not a huge loss just because he'd slid down the depth chart some, but that's some speed you don't have that clearly they wanted to use.
The threat,
vertically.
Yeah.
They do not have Brandon Scherff at guard. Wes Schweitzer played really well at left guard last year. I thought he was admirable at right guard when Scherff got hurt this past week. Over the course of an entire game against an awesome defensive front with a really good player in Cam Jordan, that is a concern for me. Not having Scherff is a big deal, and don't tell me it's not. If it's not, then you should have never paid him $18 million, which you shouldn't have done that anyway, but you definitely should have never paid him $18 million if he misses a game and it's just okay. Now, it's probably more okay than we'd like because it's the guard position, and it's the least important position on offense, even though Washington doesn't seem to understand that, and they're paying him $18 million on a rental for some reason that I don't quite really understand. But not having him is going to sting.
So I'm looking at what he's done at this point, talking to Taylor Heinicke. If game script goes according to their plan, right, he'll throw in the 30s.
Hang on. Are you going to Heinicke? Because
yeah.
I'm going to finish the injury report.
Oh, please, go. Sorry. Yeah.
I was just seeing if you wanted to talk about Scherff. But before you do whatever you're about to do, let me finish the injury report. Cam Sims out. Not a big loss.
Not a factor.
And then the four guys that are questionable, Curtis Samuel with the groin. We think Gibson's going to go with the shin. Cole Holcomb with the shoulder. What if he can't play? They don't have John Bostic or Cole Holcomb, and it's Jamin Davis.
And Kalik Hudson?
Or
special teams guys, David Mayo? Yeah.
The kid they just called up from the practice squad. Mm. That would be amazing if that happened.
Yeah, and Samuel's not trending towards playing, you wouldn't think, right? Not being able to do much this week?
He practiced today. If you practice on Friday, I normally expect that you're going to play on Sunday. But, I mean, he may not. I think that's probably the truest 50-50 they got. Payne, who had a setback. He was not on the injury report the last couple days. Did something with his toe and didn't practice at all today. That, to me, is scary. Like, you didn't practice and you're on the injury report for the first time on Friday? Normally, that means you're not playing.
Yeah, the flag goes up.
But Tim Settle's been so good that you could get by for a week, I think.
And it sounds like Ioannidis probably, he's been on the injury report, missed a game, and has been kind of limited. It sounds like
he's full go. He was full participant in practice
today. So that's the only spot where you actually feel okay about depth, right? That's not the end of the world if Ron Payne can't go
totally.
This week. Payne's good, don't get me wrong. And he played his best game against Buffalo a couple weeks back. But you can go with Ioannidis and Tim Settle and company. So just in terms of, you listed some of those offensive weapons that they're not going to have. Gibson might be limited. I think it's going to be tough sledding for Heinicke. I really do. I think it's going to be his best players are going to be the backyard football, kind of Heinicke magic type stuff. And I think there'll be opportunities there to McKissick kind of on a scramble drill. I think McLaurin will have a couple looks there. I just don't see a weapon at tight end that's going to scare you. I know Seals Jones was fine this past week with a couple catches, one nice catch and run for a first down.
As a pass catcher, you don't like him? I mean, I think he's...
I like him fine, but I don't think he's a threat.
Fair. I like him a lot. My concern is more holding up in the blocking game. Mm-hmm. John Bates got to grow up real fast now.
Yeah,
help them
luck.
Out a whole lot. But I don't think RSJ is going to do that. I don't think that's something that... They didn't keep him on the roster to block. Is there any way Samus Reyes gets elevated?
Remember?
Or does Jay Sternberger play this weekend over him?
Yeah, it's probably Sternberger, honestly. So in terms of a line for Heinicke, I'm looking at that 22 for 35, 250 yards... two touchdowns and a pick. Like he'd be in contention for Jag of the Week type stuff. I think New Orleans is good. I think the injuries, not necessarily the Scherff because you can get away with it for a game, but not having Samuel, a couple other factors start to build up. You worry that it's kind of like that Buffalo game again. You worry that it's kind of an average of that Buffalo and the Giants game where game script just said, we're throwing the hell out of it. He threw it 46 times. If that happens, you know, throw this out the window. But I think it'll be tight enough where they're able to mix a little bit, but I don't see a banner day for him. I think I see an okay day.
We're actually pretty lockstep, it seems like. I wrote down 263 yards, two touchdowns, and an interception. I could throw a second in there as like a late game, trying to get back into it. Now you got to throw the ball a bunch. And no one's going to hold it against you because you're just trying to play hero. But I definitely think he gets picked off. And I think he's under the passing yards he's been a couple times now, up around 300. Let's go to Andy in Falls Church looking for your Taylor Heinicke stat line against the Saints, going up a weight class defensively from last week.
Yeah, I'm about where you guys were. I'd say like 25 or 40 and 300. two touchdowns and two turf pounding interceptions, where he loves to be demonstrative there. But can I make a comment about the division rival stuff? I agree with you guys, but what it made me think of is where I think it does make a little sense is, like, I've become a huge Luka Doncic fan and Mavericks fan, so I was rooting hard for them to beat the Clippers. But as soon as they lost in seven, I started rooting for the Clippers to win the whole thing because, you know, then they'd be the second-best team in the league.
So that one is another thing that people love to do is, like, if your team loses to a team, do you then want that team to win to make your team look better? There's a lot of people that do that.
Yeah.
So the way you would track this would be, last year Washington lost to the Bucks. People start clamoring for Tampa Bay and going, if they win, then the team we lost to went to the NFC title game.
I was cool with that. I kind of did that a little bit.
I am perfectly fine with that. What I am frustrated by is the acting like you're close because you lost to the team or beat the team in some cases that went on to win the Super Bowl. Like, I don't know if people remember this. There was a 3-year runaround here where Washington essentially lost to the team that eventually won the Super Bowl.
It's kind of crazy.
I shouldn't say lost. Beat the team.
Like, beat the Ravens, beat the Giants.
Right. The Packers, yeah. I think, were in there. So they would beat the team that went on to win the Super Bowl. And this was right around, like, 2010 for a few straight years. And people would reference that at the end of these years as evidence for how close they were. That this random game that happened on September 29th or October 13th, they beat this team. You go back and you're like, well, wait a second. Aaron Rodgers got concussed and they had a backup come into the game for the rest of the game. That's not the Packers team that went on to win the Super Bowl. But you just talk yourself into, we could beat the Packers and they won the Super Bowl. We could beat anybody. So I have no problem in real time rooting for the team that eliminated you to go win, as long as you don't use it to try to fool yourself on the back end.
That's a good point.
Let's go to Mitch in Wardoff. What's up, brother? How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Hey, bud.
So my line is going to be close to what y'all had. I'm going to go 283 with two total touchdowns. One of them is going to be rushing.
Ooh, okay.
And I am on the fence with two interceptions possibly because against Atlanta, he should have had two picks against him by Harris.
I remember seeing that stat. I don't remember the specific plays, but you recall a couple near picks?
Yeah, Harris came out, and then that was before he actually got injured. And the one that he threw to McLaurin, that was a great throw. But, I mean, if the defender was paying attention, he should have had a pick there.
Appreciate you, buddy. We've talked about it a lot this week. PFF does turnover-worthy plays, mm-hmm. bottom 10 in the league in that area. Basically, it just gives you an idea of, hey, sometimes you get lucky, someone drops a pick.
Sure, you're living dangerously.
Do you throw a ball up for grabs? Is there a play that you made you shouldn't have that could have resulted in a turnover? And it doesn't show favorably for him, which is normally a precursor of things to come. But I also think the other side of that is he can make adjustments. He can not throw some of those balls and start to get more comfortable and see things a little quicker. Good calls. Appreciate that. Let's wrap things up with what we learned today on G&D. What did we learn today? It's driven by your local Honda dealer. Racing for a great deal on the Honda of your dreams during the Honda Dream Garage event. Take advantage of the savings and see your local Honda dealer today.
I thought my oldest son had an 8 a.m. soccer game tomorrow. What I learned, thank goodness, was that not only does he not have a game at 8 a.m. tomorrow, he doesn't have a game of any kind. Everybody's taking the week off because it's Columbus Day. I also learned that it's Columbus Day on Monday.
Wow.
So all these things that I had on the calendar, I'm not right. I now am like a week off with everything.
Do we come in on Monday or no?
We do?
I think we do.
We do come in on Monday.
All right. Well, I'll see you Monday, buddy.
I'll see you Monday as well.
So there we go. That's what I learned.
I learned today, I didn't know this until about 4:30. I'm getting to go to the Capitals preseason hockey match tonight. All right. I haven't been to a Caps game with a live audience with real human beings since 2019. And getting to do that again today is going to mean a lot to me. Be a little emotional at the arena.
Is it full kind of squad playing, like ramping up veterans and everybody?
Yesterday they did. I don't know yet if they're at the back-to-back mode, but you're going to have the vast majority of the roster. The game they played, I guess it was two nights ago, mm-hmm. Manta scored the game-winning goal. Oshie had a goal. Willie had a goal. It was the 2021 Washington Capitals.
I'd enjoy that.
So we're at that phase of the preseason. Remember, they open middle of next week against the Rangers, who went out and got like six goons to try to all fight Tom Wilson on opening night. That's less than a week away. When Tom Wilson, who was chopping down trees with his shirt off with his dad this offseason.
Looked like Henry Cavill in the offseason.
He's just going to have to fight five guys on opening night because the Rangers are still sad that he embarrassed them on national TV.
Horrifying
last year.
Acts of violence.
So funny. Next, you're going to hear from Sam Fortier of the Washington Post, who's been in Ashburn all week long. He's got the latest on the football team. We also caught up with Chris Trapasso of CBS Sports. He does a great film breakdown this week on the Washington defense. You're listening to G&D on 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.